Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Maybe you can hear the Clark's Nutcrackers complaining right now in the background. When I put out a seed column for our wild birds, those nutcrackers with their huge, sharp beaks can demolish the seed column in one day. So I got one of those cages that the little birds can get inside of to feed, but the squirrels and larger birds cannot. Oh, don't worry. It's okay. I have suet feeders around my house, too, so the nutcrackers will be just fine. And the seed and suet I put out for the birds is just to get them close to the house so I can count them. They would be fine without my help. Later in the program, I'll have more about some of our resident birds. I also have some more gratitudes and a field note from Montana Natural History Center. But first, let's see what Desert Oracle has been up to. Our episode of Desert Oracle Radio today was produced by Ken Lane on November 25th, 2023. It's titled Trivia Night in the High Desert, for obvious reasons. I hope you like trivia. I do. I wonder where I can find a trivia night nearby. Anyway, enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
9 has fallen on the desert, cold and windy on this holiday weekend. I was glancing at the news this morning and there were the usual stories about people going to, I guess not shopping malls, wherever people go. What replaced shopping malls? And I realized I've never been to a mall or a big box retailer or any such place the day after Thanksgiving, I don't think ever in my life. Or on most other days of the year. Not for fun, anyway. When I was a teenager, one of my early jobs was working at this cheese shop in a mall. Back when people loved malls, when people would go to a shopping center and just spend the whole day there. Teenagers especially, very strange. Especially because teenagers generally did not have any money to spend at the mall. So the security guards, hardly more than teenagers themselves, were always trying to chase off the teens. And you'd see older people walking back and forth. You'd see people pushing baby strollers with babies inside the stroller instead of a dog. Lots of babies. Seems like everybody used to have some. The cheese store sold gift boxes, which people would buy to mail to other people. Everything inside the box was so packed with preservatives, tremendous amounts of salt, mostly. So it would presumably be safe to eat a month later at Christmas time. For an extra charge, we would ship the cheese and sausage box anywhere in the USA. So after the shop closed, I'd be in the stockroom handwriting UPS labels in triplicate for these terrible gift boxes. For a while, I was dating a girl who worked at the Baskin-Robbins down the way. I'd come by after work and she'd say, "Let me go change out of this uniform." And I'd say, "Oh, I don't mind. I'm not changing out of my work clothes." And she'd say, "Well, your work clothes are normal. I'm wearing an orange striped miniskirt." which looks fantastic, I'd say. And then she'd change anyway, and we'd drive off into the American night. Sometimes we'd stop by my friend's house in El Cajon, some of the oddballs I'd met here and there. A couple of these guys lived in the converted garage behind this guy John's grandmother's little house, I think. I never saw the grandmother. I'd always bring a big order of roll tacos with guacamole from the Alberto's. You could get 24 for $6, I think. All piled up like the Dickens. My buddies would always have cheap beer and hot coffee and some trucker pills and all kinds of weird videotapes playing with the sound turned off. And punk rock records blasting or some old jazz LPs. Very bohemian for El Cajon. Turns out Lester Bangs lived right around the corner from there a couple years earlier.
I have 10 bonus questions, which are not from the internet, which are not from the trivia machine. So don't feel bad if you don't know.
Have a trivia machine?
There's a trivia machine back here somewhere. I'm just going to hold this paper by the fire. This is going to be question one. All these questions are related to the Mojave Desert around us, more or less. Number one, question one, known as the Apostle of the Cacti. This advocate for the creation of desert national parks was named after this ancient Roman goddess. Once again, known as the Apostle of the Cacti, this advocate for the creation of desert national parks was named after this Roman goddess. Question two, are we ready? This poet who died in Paris made a 1969 art film called Highway in and around Joshua Tree National Monument. This poet who died in Paris made this 1969 art film called Highway in and around Joshua Tree National Monument. Is everybody local here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're not.
Half the easy one.
That's good. That's good. So these will be easy. Easy questions for people who've lived here a long time or been coming here a long time. Or who have a copy of these answers. Question three, if we're ready. The originally proposed name for the 1936 National Monument straddling the Mojave and Colorado deserts was... The originally proposed name for this 1936 National Monument straddling the Mojave and Colorado deserts was this. Question number four of the bonus round. While Our local monstrosity is known as Yucca Man. The monster of Anza Borrego Desert State Park is called.
I forgot all.
Knowledge is fleeting.
That's true.
Question number 5. The cover for this 1980 debut album by an acclaimed Los Angeles punk rock band features their name on fire, photographed in the Mojave Desert.
I know this one. Don't worry. I'm redeeming myself.
The cover for this 1980 debut album by the acclaimed Los Angeles rock band features their name on fire, photographed in the Mojave Desert. It's question 6, if you're ready. This TikTok singer, not a singer on TikTok, but the singer of the song TikTok, claims that she saw flying saucers over Joshua Tree. All right. Are we ready for the 7th question? One of the last great vocalists of the jazz and standards era, she retired and lived out her life on her horse ranch in Pioneertown. One of the last great vocalists of the jazz and standards and R&B era. She retired and lived out her life on her horse ranch in Pioneertown. Question number 8. These big-eared creatures migrate from the San Bernardino Mountains to the high desert every winter. These big-eared creatures migrate from the San Bernardino Mountains to the high desert every winter. Number 9. Are you ready for 9?
Yep.
You know, in sports trivia, people are screaming the whole time. And you're all like you're taking your citizenship test.
It's a different music plan, too.
That's true. That's true.
Less drop tunes.
That's, yeah, we need to put on some Huey Lewis and the News.
All right.
And get some pennants going up there. Number 9. Oh, I can't do that one. Sorry. I'll make up a number 9. This Christian megachurch has long controlled Yucca Valley civic politics. This Christian megachurch has long controlled Yucca Valley civic politics.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's the only one I know that answer to.
is why there are no dispensaries here. The whole In-N-Out thing just sounds dirty. You can't have that.
Yeah, it's too much.
Why we can't have nice things?
Even with John 3:16 on the underside of the French fries box.
It's not enough.
It's not enough.
It's not enough to cock out.
Can't cover the sin.
Yeah.
All right, we have one more. This aircraft safety inspector moved from Venice Beach to the subterranean lair of his road-cutting friend in Landers, who died in a shootout with San Bernardino sheriff's deputies. So we're looking for the aircraft safety inspector, not the person he replaced, who died in a shootout with San Bernardino sheriff's deputies in an underground lair in Landers. And such are the questions. Thanks for coming to Trivia Night.
Do we need any repeats?
One of the last great vocalists of the jazz and standards era. She retired and lived out her life on her horse ranch in Pioneer Town. That was 7. And you also want 10?
Yes, please.
This aircraft safety inspector from Venice Beach, California, moved into the subterranean lair in Landers where his friend died in a shootout with San Bernardino sheriff's deputies. Has the time come? The time has come to
trade
your. But who actually knows the answers to any of these questions?
I guess we'll find out.
So this is less of right or wrong.
I definitely know 5.
Than convincing the people who grade your score.
So it's like a debate tournament.
All right, let's trade and grade.
I can debate.
That's what we all want, especially at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I'm probably the only vegan here, so I can debate. Now
we're going to do the answers for the bonus round. They're going to be 3 points per question, okay? Everybody, 3 points per question.
All right, let's see here. Number one, the answer for the question known as the Apostle of the Cacti, this advocate for the creation of desert national parks, was named after this ancient Roman goddess. Who knows it?
Minerva.
Yes, Minerva. Minerva Hamilton Hoyt is considered the founding spirit of Joshua Tree National Monument and now Park. Name for the goddess. Who is also the only goddess we're allowed to openly worship in California. It's on every state seal, even on the CHP cars. There's a Minerva. So think of how that's interesting when you're shot by the police. A real step forward. Number two, the poet who died in Paris, who made the 1969 art film called Highway in and around Joshua Tree National Monument. Anyone?
Jim Morrison?
Yes. James Morrison. Wrote and co-directed the film, which went into the San Francisco Film Festival in 1970. And was booed by the kids. He was so sad he moved to Paris and died. Number three, the originally proposed name for the 1936 National Monument straddling the Mojave and Colorado deserts. Anyone? Desert Plants National Monument.
Desert Plants.
That was the first name. Desert Plants. It's a terrible name. It's a terrible name. They sent it back. Let's do better.
Get some rewrites.
Number four. While our local monstrosity is known as Yucca Man, a 7 foot tall, holographic red-eyed monster that haunts people on the marine base and at campgrounds, etc. The monster of Anza Borrego Desert State Park is called, anyone?
Borrego Man?
Very close. You're so close.
Anza Man?
Is called the Borrego Sandman.
Oh.
First sighted in the second gold rush that went down the mountains into Riverside and San Diego County and tied up in the notorious legend of Peg Leg Smith.
Peg Leg Smith.
Yes, who supposedly found a gold, not even a mine. He said there was so much gold that you could pick it up like rocks off the sand.
Oh, wow.
And yet no one ever found it, and he did not die wealthy. Number five, the cover for this 1980 debut album by Los Angeles rock band features their name on fire photographed in the Mojave Desert. Who knows it?
I do.
X.
Is X, Los Angeles. The owner of the record label, the co-owner of the record label, made a 2x4 X, took it out to the desert, poured gasoline all over it, set it on fire, took some Super 8 or 16 millimeter film shots of it, and they picked a frame for the record cover, which looks like it has a face in it. It's very, very spooky. All right, number six. This TikTok singer, not a singer on TikTok, but the singer and writer of the song called TikTok, says she saw flying saucers over Joshua Tree. Anyone? Yes, it's Kesha.
Who did say they loved my boyfriend.
Of course, she said it at the end
and
of the
I
song,
to
right? She's got a song where she says at the end, I like your beard.
Yeah, that
yeah. Cool. Yeah. What, did you fight her?
I would. She backed off.
That's good. We got to keep these celebrities in their place when they visit. Number seven, one of the last great vocalists of the jazz and standards era. She retired and lived out her life on her horse farm in Pioneertown. Anyone? Nancy Wilson, the great jazz and soul vocalist Nancy Wilson, lived in Pioneertown for 25 plus years. She passed away 3 or 4 years ago. She also ran a Girl Scouts camping program off her ranch. They went hiking into what is now Sand to Snow National Monument. All right, we're almost done. Number eight. These big-eared creatures migrate from the San Bernardino Mountains to the high desert every winter. Who are they?
Joshua Springs?
No. Question.
We're not there yet.
No.
The Joshua Springs people don't like to be called big-eared creatures.
They are. Bats.
California mule deer.
Oh.
The California mule deer The bighorn sheep is far better known from the sort of icons of the bighorn everywhere, but there's a lot more mule deer.
I've never seen a deer here.
They travel at night.
I do not.
You can find their trails all through these mountains behind here, and sometimes you see them. I saw some today, in fact. This Christian suburban megachurch has long controlled politics in Yucca Valley. Yes, Joshua Springs.
Yes. I win.
I always thought it was funny that they called themselves Joshua Springs because Joshua and Jesus are the same name. And they ought to just call it Jesus Springs and just kind of skip the middleman, you know? But they didn't.
They don't want to be too obvious.
Desert Plains Calvary Chapel. Let's do it. Yes. And one more, number 10. This aircraft safety inspector moved from Venice Beach to the subterranean lair in Landers, where his friend died in a shootout with San Bernardino sheriff's deputies. We're looking for the name of the aircraft safety engineer.
George
Van Tassel met Frank Kreitzer, who was known as Straight Road Kreitzer in Landers because without apparently any official engineering knowledge, he could cut roads that were totally north-south straight. And when he died in a shootout with the cops, all of his furniture was made of dynamite. And this is 100% true. The cases of dynamite that he used in mining, and he put Mexican blankets over them to make them, you know, cozy things. And when they shot in, the dynamite went off, and boom. Thank you, everybody.
Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. The soundscapes on this program are composed and performed by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I hope you like Trivia Night, because you just heard Trivia Night. I hope you played along. And I hope you're having a good holiday. If it's still the holiday when you're listening to this show, many people listen on a podcast. Lots of people visiting the desert national parks all across the Southwest. Roads are a little busier than usual, so be careful out there. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I saw the most near accidents I've ever seen in one day in Yucca Valley, and that's saying a lot. Yeah, people hauling off-road vehicle trailers sailing through red lights as the cross traffic is already in the intersection. You got the Airbnb renters walking their little dogs in the middle of busy roads. Don't leave your brain at home, folks. You're gonna need it out here. Maybe more than at home. Hey, there's no LA show on December 2. Another disaster out there. Sorry about that. But there's the first ever Desert Oracle opening for a rock band show with the band Earth on December 1st. That's the last one. I'm done with all this. I need dignity. Good night from the voice of the desert.
And we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Okay, so we just heard some high desert trivia, and that inspired me to go over some trivia questions with my chemist husband, Bill. And he doesn't know I'm doing this. So these were actually found on the watercoolertrivia.com webpage. So here we go. Bill. Number one, the town of Ekalaka, Montana, was named for the daughter of what famous Sioux chief?
I don't know. Am I supposed to guess?
Yeah, you can guess.
I don't know Sioux chiefs. I don't know.
Do you know any chiefs?
Sitting Bull.
Okay, number two. How many presidents have called Montana their home state?
Zero.
Number three. Montana shares a northern border with three Canadian provinces. Name two of the three.
I don't know. Saskatchewan, maybe. I don't know. Saskatchewan and Ontario. I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good idea. Number
four. The longest serving U.S. senator from Montana had the initials M.M. He also served as a professor of history and political science at the University of Montana. Who was this man?
Michael Mansfield.
The first national park in the U.S. is often considered the first national park in the world. This park technically lies within Montana and what two other states?
Well, it's Yellowstone Park, and so there's certainly Wyoming and Montana. I don't know, maybe Idaho.
And last, what is the two-word name for the white buffalo born on the Flathead Indian Reservation in 1933 and is now on display in Helena?
I'm glad this is the last question. The white buffalo's name was Blanco. Maybe that means white. Buff. Blanco Buff.
Okay, Bill, you did great. Number one, the answer was indeed Sitting Bull. It was his daughter that Ekalaka is named after. And how many presidents have called Montana their home state? You are correct. Zero. Montana shares a northern border with three Canadian provinces. Name two of the three. Well, the three are, I think you guessed, what, Saskatchewan? And the other two are British Columbia and Alberta. Number four, the longest-serving U.S. senator from Montana had the initials M.M. He also served as a professor of history and political science at the University of Montana. Who is this man? You guessed Michael Mansfield. Mike Mansfield is the guy. And the first national park in the U.S. is often considered the first national park in the world. This park technically lies within Montana and what two other two states? You guessed Wyoming and Idaho. Ding, 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 yes. And what is the two-word name for the white buffalo born on the Flathead Indian Reservation in 1933 and now on display in Helena? Answer? You guessed
Blanco Buff.
The answer is Big Medicine. You did great, Bill.
What's my prize?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Just the glory. I think the glory.
Oh.
So thanks for playing Montana trivia today. Maybe we'll play it again another time. And next up, we have a Montana field note. A
It's time for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center. Near Chamomotutlach, place of smoky land, or Yellowstone National Park, in -5 degree weather, I kneeled on my freshly skinned bison hide, which provided a steaming warmth beneath me. By the time I began skinning my bison, it was dark. I looked up into the starry night, and a flood of emotions came over me as I thought about my ta'ayak and Bitterroot Salish ancestors who hunted this way for thousands of years. All of a sudden, the Sinchilchitlep coyotes began howling, and I felt the strong connection to my ancestors and the bison. This hunt helped me realize the sacred significance of bison to my people, and I wanted to find out more about these glorious animals. Bison are one of the largest animals in North America. The male bison can grow as tall as 6 feet and can weigh up to 2,000 pounds. The females can grow up to 5 feet tall and weigh over 1,000 pounds. Bison can jump high fences and run up to 35 miles per hour. The average lifespan of a bison is 15 to 20 years. Ta'ayakin ventured to the plains yearly to hunt kwai-kwai bison. The kwai-kwai were the main source of food for the Salish people, as well as the basis for shelter, clothing, and tools. The Salish believed that all parts of the kwai-kwai should be used and not wasted. Both the Salish and Blackfeet made a claim to the hunting grounds east of the Continental Divide. Typically, the Salish people would team up with other tribes like the Nez Perce or other Salishian tribes to have a better chance against the Blackfeet. The Salish people had a couple of methods for hunting the kwai-kwai. Sometimes they would dress up in bison hides to sneak into the herd. Other times they would hunt kwai-kwai by horseback. The preferred method, however, was the buffalo jump, where hunters drove the bison herd over a cliff. The kwai-kwai that did not die after the fall would be killed by the women with war clubs. The women also processed the kwai-kwai hides and meat. The kwai-kwai have to be skinned right after they are killed, or else the meat spoils quickly. Kwai-kwai brains were used to soften the hides while they were tanned. The meat was cut into thin slices and put on a dry meat rack that had a dim, smoky fire beneath it. The dried meat was then stored away for the winter. In the late 1800s, bison became scarce after the deliberate extermination campaign by the United States government. During that time, the Ta'ayakin had their last kwai-kwai hunt, only killing 7 bison. It wasn't until the 1870s that Atatitzet, Falcon Robe, had a vision to bring back the kwai-kwai to the Flathead Reservation. The chief at the time did not want to domesticate the kwai-kwai. Atatitzet's son, Satati, Little Falcon Robe, was the one to bring his father's vision to life. Satati brought back 6 orphan kwai-kwai calves to the Flathead Reservation from the plains. These kwai-kwai grew into the largest herd in North America. Sadly, the Allotment Act of 1904 split up the land and opened up the Flathead Indian Reservation to white settlers. The Salish were forced to sell their kwai-kwai herd to create spaces for the settlers. The herd was sold to a man in Kalispell, then later to the United States government, and in 1908, they became the first kwai-kwai to populate the National Bison Range. In 2020, the ownership of the bison range was restored to the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. Today, the National Bison Range is home to 350 to 500 kwai-kwai, with 2,300 to 5,500 more living in and around Yellowstone National Park. In 2006, after 100 years of oppression, Ta'ayaqin and other local tribes were finally able to travel to their Aboriginal hunting grounds near Yellowstone to hunt bison. My first bison hunt was a life-changing experience that helped me connect to the old ways that had been absent for so long. Now, once again, it has become a vibrant part of our Seidlish hunting stories that can be taught to our children for generations to come. For Field Notes, I'm Aspen Decker, a member of the Confederated Seidlish and Kootenai Tribes. Field Notes are brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center, providing natural history education for schools and the public throughout Montana. For information on upcoming events and programs at the center, call 327-0405 or visit our website at montananaturalist.org.
So we just heard a field note about bison hunting, and one of the things she mentioned was how they use the brains to tan the hide, and I've been curious to ask my husband, who is a chemist, he's also the guy behind Mundy's Molecules, anyway, I'm going to ask Bill right now about why is it that the brains are used to tan the hides? Here we go. Bill, you have the question.
Tanning involves removing some of the fibers and muscle tissue and fatty tissues and things like that from the underneath side of the hide. And water doesn't usually do a good job at that because when you want those fats and oils and things to dissolve away from the hide, you need to use something that is similar in chemical makeup. And in the world of chemicals, we can divide, in a general way, molecules and chemicals into two broad groups. One group is things that dissolve in water, we call them polar, and things that don't dissolve in water, which we call nonpolar. And so the chemicals that make up brain tissue in animals is typically nonpolar, for the most part. And so what you would do, what people would do, is they would take the brain nonpolar material and rub it into the inner side of the hide because it was nonpolar as well. And so you could push it in there and mush it around and eventually scrape it out, and it would actually help dissolve many of those other nonpolar materials that are on the inside of the hide. That way you could get the hide prepared for other treatments that would help it be soft. And the nonpolar brain tissue was commonly used historically by Native American cultures to tan the hides of skin so they could be used for other products. But they made use of animals in lots of ways, in complete ways, making sure that nothing much went to waste.
And a little something from Bird Note about Clark's Nutcrackers.
This is Bird Note. High in the mountains near Treeline in the western states, a Clark's Nutcracker folds its wings and dives. The bird plunges nearly 1,000 feet, a black, white, and gray thunderbolt. Pulling up and landing, the Clark's Nutcracker buries a cache of pine seeds with its long black bill. It's October, and snow is on the way. Since August, the Nutcracker has been harvesting and caching the seeds of white bark pines. In a special pouch under its tongue, a structure unique to nutcrackers, the bird can hold more than 80 pine seeds. It will stash away tens of thousands of seeds each summer. Most it will dig up during the snowy months ahead. The seeds are nearly its sole source of food until the next summer. But some of these cached seeds are forgotten. These may germinate, spawning a small grove of pines. White-barked pines are one of more than 20 species of pines worldwide that rely almost exclusively on birds like nutcrackers to renew their forests. Clark's Nutcracker, named for the famous Western explorer William Clark, is one of nature's indispensable tree planters. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Well, my thanks to Bird Note, to Montana Natural History Center, to Aspen Decker, to watercoolertrivia.com, and to my husband Bill for their contributions to this segment. Last week, I began including some gratitudes from my Google voicemail near the end of the program. I'm still accepting these calls to include on shows through December. You can add your own gratitude to the recordings. Just call 1-406-404-6246. Thanks in advance. Right now, let's hear some more of our fellow humans' gratitudes. Well, first off, I'm going to give you some of my own gratitudes. I am grateful for my memories of those that are no longer alive and for the time still left to let the living know why they mean so much to me. I'm grateful for my friends at KGVM who have helped and supported me to create this program. As time goes on, I realize they are not just fellow volunteers, but friends who care beyond the station work. The variety of KGVM programming is because of these DJs and technicians sharing their skills, knowledge, and interests. Wow. I am especially grateful to Ruth Eddy, Joy LeClaire, and Bob Wall for their incredible patience with my questions and also for their remarkable programming. I am grateful for my physical therapist, my massage therapist, and my chiropractor in helping me recover from my rotator cuff injuries of a year ago. I have hope that I can climb again. And I'm grateful for my family and extended family. And this program doesn't have enough time to cover all those reasons.
I just wanted to say so thankful for the universe and that I am the universe, looking at the universe.
Hey, Rocks. It's Ruth. I'm so grateful that you are my radio friend, and I want to share so much gratitude with you. Wow. When I recently got into a car accident, it was scary, but I was so grateful that I was able to be totally okay, and I'm feeling very grateful to be able to breathe and walk. Wow, so much to be grateful for. Grateful for you.
And I am grateful for you, Gallatin Valley, and online listeners for giving me your attention for this hour. As always, you can call me and leave a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 1-406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Now, here is one more thing I want you to know about. KGVM is hosting an event Saturday, December 9th. It's Local Vendors for Local Radio. It's Saturday, December 9th from 12 to 4 p.m. There'll be local artists, vintage clothes, records, and more for sale with 10% of purchases to benefit KGVM. Hot drinks, hot tunes, and good times. The location is the Labor Temple upstairs at 422 East Menden Hall in Bozeman. Hey, the radio station is downstairs and you might find a DJ and get a tour. I'll be there, so stop by, say hello, and shop for a one-of-a-kind item for Christmas or just because you deserve it. Well, that's about it for today, so till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams. Or maybe get up and dance. All those gratitudes have me thinking of a song. It's Praise You by Fatboy Slim, taking us out today.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good. I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you. I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you like I should. I have to.